live from two-thirds of us in the Cowboys state. Look at Cole and Fred visiting each other. We're back in No Man's Land Tennis, giving you a midweek update at Rome. Everything's going on in that now, like we always talk about, the two-week Masters right before Roland Garros. Gentlemen, Fred, you took a little flight over there to visit our boy. How you doing?
We're on the cowboy boots, my jeans strapped up, got on the plane, thunderstorm. Cold picked me up, a little rainy, but sun's shining now and excited for a week in the cowboy state.
Yeah, this guy already had boots on this morning in D.C. That's how excited he was. We already put some brisket in the belly, you know, got some barbecue talking in him, and, tackle some beers later.
You guys gonna step on a court with a little brisket in the stomach, or
we'll see. We'll see if the weather holds and we can find a couple of rackets.
It's gonna be an interesting weather week, so we'll see what happens.
They call it a 10-gallon cap. How many gallons would it be from my head? Like, what are we thinking? Like, how many extra gallons are we gonna have to put on for this thing? I'm thinking 15, 20 maybe.
It's going to be bigger than Doug Dimmadome's hat.
Oh, Doug Dimmadome, home of the Dimmstown Diggadome. Oh, come on, you got to get that Fairly Odd Parents reference. But like I said, we are in Rome right now. We are in the middle. We have a lot to cover. We got the GOAT discussions getting smacked around a little bit in Djokovic, Nadal. We have not a shock retirement, but it was kind of a sad retirement that looks like it's happening at the end of this year on tour. And Djokovic got a concussion from some water. So there we are right there. We're in kind
alleged
concussion from some water. But I think we got to start off on the men's side with Dominic Thiem announcing earlier this week, or actually at the end of last week, that this is his last year on tour. He has not been the same player since he's hurt his wrist, kind of scuffling right around like 80, anywhere from like 100 to 60 in the world. It's a shame, because at the peak of Dominic Thiem's powers, we forget how absolutely brutally good he was on the court. So I'm guessing he's going to end at Vienna. That would make sense. And it's the end of the road for Dominic Thiem at a very young age.
Yeah, it's very frustrating for me. It's sad and it's frustrating, but I really like Dominic Thiem. I like his game. I think for everybody here with our one-handers, it's a shame to see him go out this way. Such a promising career, already such a great career as is. I mean, beat Federer, Indian Wells, and then, of course, U.S. Open champion against Zverev in that COVID year, asterisk or not.
It's not an asterisk.
So, it's a shame. You feel like there could have been a whole lot more for him, and it's unfair when these guys get things taken away from them that you feel like they don't deserve their careers.
Yeah, I mean, it goes into how you phrase it, Keith. Like, people forget how he just was on fire on the tour for a while. I mean, the record he has against the big three is the best of almost.
Do you have it in front of you?
No, you probably
do. I do.
Yeah, go ahead, say it.
Yeah. From 2017 to 2020, he was 13-11 against the big three, 5-3 against Djokovic, 5-7 against Nadal, 3-1 against Fed. In his career, he was 16-19 against the big three. Had a winning record against Federer in his career. And not at small tournaments either.
Yeah.
World Tour Finals and Grand Slams.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was something that I kind of noted. Like, once I saw that stat, then it started taking me back to like, oh, shit, this guy could really play. Yeah. Because we've been watching a lot of tennis, and obviously the three of us have, by just doing this podcast, and we've been following along, and he just hasn't been relevant the entire time that we've been doing this podcast. And so I've kind of not dismissed, but like every time you saw his name, I'm like, okay, what random challenger is he trying to go and win one set in the first round? And that's it. And like, what tweets am I going to see of Jose Morgado posting him hitting balls, re-hitting balls again for the first time in 3 months again. Like, and that's been my memory of him. But then you see that record, and I'm like, damn, yeah, people forget just what a force he was.
It also goes to show, like, I mean, I saw him when he was starting his comeback at Indian Wells, not this past year, but the year before, where he just got a wild card in, or not, maybe protected ranking. And I was sitting there behind his court, and I took a 5-minute video And
Oh, I remember this.
I'm like, man, this guy doesn't look hurt.
You're like, you remember you said he was back? You were like,
Yeah,
oh,
I
he's gonna
was
win
like,
a
this
Grand
guy.
Slam. I remember this.
So a lot of people are saying like, keep going, and I've seen some comparisons to, if Murray can do it and the guy's a robot, why can't you? Like, it just kind of like it, they he's gonna know the best about his own physical capabilities. And does he want to hang around 900 or 90 and 100 his the rest of his time on career, or just move on? So yeah, the guys are really good on tour, and I guess he feels like he just can't get back to that level. So respect the wishes, sucks.
He's got, in my opinion, the worst luck with when his peak was. Because I'm going to make a bold claim here, and I think some people are going to hate me for this. I think he's a better tennis player than Delpo was, but Delpo was liked more because when Delpo came on tour, there really wasn't a Novak Djokovic. Djokovic won his first Grand Slam in what, 08? He just won one. When Dominic Thiem was at his peak, all three of the big three were humming. You had Nadal, you had Federer, you had them playing Grand Slam finals, you had Djokovic still winning. So he was kind of the fourth guy where Delpo, you can make the argument, was kind of pushing in. I mean, you can't debate his record. He hit the shit out of the ball consistently, and consistently was one of the few guys that took it to the big three. Like I said, he only has that one Grand Slam, and that's because he's 0-3 against the big three in Grand Slam finals. Like in finals, he beat them in Grand Slams, but never in a best of five in the final to win a tournament. And that's where your legacy gets kind of lost. But we don't talk about Thiem the way we talk about Delpo. And I think that's kind of a shame because I don't see a lot of difference between the two of them, except maybe Dominic Thiem was better.
Yeah, I think it just really shows how hard it is in our sport to win at that level. And obviously in the era we're in with the big three, and yeah, I mean it's hard, but I don't want to take anything away from him. And I think he had an awesome career, and I'm curious to see what kind of he's going to venture into next. I wonder, is he end up coaching? Is there going to be the next Austrian guy on tour? Like who knows? But it's yeah, because he's sneakily like he's not that young. Like I think we're saying, oh, he got cut short and
They're
all,
31.
but he's not that young, but he's not that old. It's kind of like Roddick.
He's incredible. Yeah, it actually Roddick's not a bad comp either because he kept running into Federer at finals, and we kind of forget how good he was too because of that. We remember Roddick for being funnier and hitting a big serve. Like,
Yeah.
I think that's what most tennis people remember Andy Roddick from.
Yeah, one slam, world number one, American number one for the longest time. But you can look at his trophy cabinet and just thank Roger Federer for nothing being in it. You can,
For the big tournaments, he
yeah,
won. Andy
exactly.
Roddick won some tournaments. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But shout out, I mean, I don't know. In memorum or memorandum or whatever you want to call it for Dom, memorandum. Let's, I mean, put a bow on Dominic Thiem's career. I think more people should remember how good he was. There are times where he kind of annoyed me with his comments. I'm going to miss the frosted tips. But,
Remember Nick Kyrgios telling everybody that it, like watching Dominic Thiem play was like watching paint dry. That
well, it was because
was
he
a,
just.
that's an old one. That was back when he was like dating Mladenovic. Remember that?
Oh, God. And he got in
Remember
a
that
fight with
power
Vavrinka. And
couple?
he got in a fight with Vavrinka, I think about it. Oh, that was brutal. But Dominic Thiem. I mean, he was a little, he was, I guess, a little boring and maybe, but he just stood behind the, he stood 10 feet behind the baseline and swung out of his shoes. It worked. It worked. But once he couldn't do that anymore, he wasn't going to be the same player. It just wasn't going to be. That's why when we saw you, when you were hit, when you watched him hit, I was like, doesn't matter. If he's hit at 10 miles an hour less, he's not Dominic Thiem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's got two tournaments on home soil in Austria, Fred. One's going to be in Vienna and the other one's going to be in
That already
I
passed.
think it's your favorite one.
Kitzbühel.
Kitzbühel.
Kitzbühel. So shout out to Dominic Thiem there on that great career. Just watch him when you get a chance to, if you're tuning in, just because it may be the last time you can watch him, depending on how many times he plays. But speaking of the big three, I think we start off with Nadal. I guess we gotta start off with Nadal. One, a couple crazy things. He makes a wins a couple rounds in Rome and then gets absolutely destroyed by Hubert Hurkacz. And you want to talk about a parallel between that and Federer. It's a parallel. He got his ass kicked. I know Cole doesn't want to talk about it, but it's the case. Hurkacz putting the nail in Federer's coffin for his career, and Maybe he did to Nadal too.
Yeah, at least Hurkacz gave him a game and then three other ones.
He didn't triple
Respect.
bagel Federer.
Very
He didn't
respectful.
triple bagel
Or
Federer.
maybe it was because he couldn't, you know, find the frame on his Yonex racket that he's playing with. But
Right.
yeah, no, that was a beatdown. I didn't watch the match, but I knew that it was coming up. I was working, but
Hurkacz's first win at Rome. He's never won at Rome before that, and he beat
that's funny.
Nadal.
But I'm looking at the score afterwards. I was like, man, this is crazy. I didn't expect that to be the case. Nadal looked like okay in Madrid, and his first round match was.
Yeah, with Zizou, it was pretty good. Like, I'd say
That was a great match.
It was a little bit up and down, but again, we saw a lot more glimpses of the Nadal we're used to seeing on clay. And that's how he was able to prevail in the end against Zizou, 6-4 in the third. And then, yeah, ran into the buzzsaw that is Hubie Doobie Doo.
The Polish buzzsaw. That's what we're going to start calling him. The Polish coffin. Polish nail? We got to find something that's going to do with that.
Well, the Polish hammer is Marcin Gortat.
Yeah, I know. That's why I can't call him that.
Pierogi alert.
the crazier thing that happened after that was not Nadal necessarily losing. I thought he was going to. Was that the fact that he kind of said that this isn't going to be his last Rome. He said there's a chance he could play it again.
Right.
He kind of is waffling.
He also said that Roland Garros is a maybe.
That's the thing. He
this guy,
said
he doesn't know what he wants.
He's waffling.
He doesn't know what he wants.
No.
He's completely waffling. It was the big thing at Madrid, and then he said, "If I'm playing the way I'm playing at Madrid, this is last week, then I'm not gonna play in Roland Garros." And then he decides to go and play Rome, which I thought was strange because you said you weren't feeling great physically, and then you go right into another tournament right after that, and now he's got a week or two off before Roland Garros.
He's doing his farewell tour without actually saying it, but
it's a weird
else,
farewell.
But everyone realizes it, because he walks across that bridge and there's 500 million people there celebrating and taking pictures, and he's waving the pageantry. He knows
the glitz, the glam.
Yeah,
yeah, but it's like, I don't know. Like he's already. Thank you for that. But it's like,
yeah, you're welcome.
He's playing Laver Cup. Like, is he going to do that as a sign off, like Federer did? That wouldn't make.
Is the Laver Cup going to become the official retirement home?
Yeah,
is
it's that like where the MLS for all the Premier League players.
Yeah, oh, that's awful.
that's. So, I don't know. It's crazy.
If he comes back next year, I think. Would it be weird to say I'd be kind of tired of it? I'd be kind of like, all right. It's weird to be like, all right, we got to do this again.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it would depend on how his level is and stuff, but it's kind of, I don't know. It's kind of why I was a little bit at peace with how Federer went out, that he didn't try to give it one more go and like go lose to Pedro Cachi in second round at some random tournament. Like, no,
he's
no.
Ba- he's
go,
back.
Go
he's,
out.
Ba- he's back inside the top 300, though, guys.
Nadal?
No, he's Nadal's right around 270. I mean, we're talking about a potential seed for the Wimbledon US Open swing.
I'm sorry, what?
You know, he keeps at this pace. He came back around 600.
No, but once you get to 100, it's not like you win a round and you hop 30 spots. You win a round and you hop two spots.
I know. But you know, win at 250.
Cole's a rankings expert, Keith.
And at that rate, I mean, you might as well just really try.
Might as well give him world number one right now. He's climbed 300 spots.
Just automatic into the World Tour Finals.
Yeah, exactly. Turin is not out of the question.
Pat Harper has a better chance of making Turin than Nadal.
Pat Harper could make Turin, by the way, but that's a different unpacking thing. Him and his teammate are 100 in the world. What can I say? They just need to play together more. Look, Nadal, like, it's a level right now where it's sustainable to where you can win a round or two and get some points.
Yeah.
But who cares about points if you're Nadal? He wants to win the major titles. You've said that a million times on this podcast. So it's just a matter of whether or not he wants to play, not at the best health ever. But I think he's discovering things about what his reality is right now. I think it's a discovery phase for him right now.
You think he's going through the discovery of like, oh, I can actually play with a family? Like, this isn't as hard as I thought it was going to be? Or do you think he's going the other way? Maybe that's why he's waffling. Like, oh, maybe I can't.
I don't think
do
it's a family thing. I think it's a body thing. And I think that he's actually got some serious question marks about what his body is. It's not just like an inflamed knee this time and he's 24 years old.
But if it's worse, why is he saying he's coming back?
Because he wants to give the fans that you know, finality.
I don't know. I'm stuck with him. I don't know what he's thinking.
Well, yeah, we can't read his mind, so time will tell.
Fix his golf swing, though.
Here's what I think. I think that if you hit him over the head with a water bottle, he would still be a lot smarter than Novak Djokovic.
That is one of the worst segues I've ever heard in my life into Novak Djokovic's tournament. So yeah, I guess we'll go into the other one of the goats that are on tour, which is Novak Djokovic, who the Zapruder film has showed was very similar to the JFK assassination, that water bottle. For those who don't know, considering you guys are in Texas, I figured you'd appreciate that. I couldn't tell the difference.
Jesus.
So Djokovic is leaving his first round of 64 win. He's signing autographs in the little tunnel that gets out of there. A fan leans over, a water bottle falls out of his backpack about 3 or 4 feet. It is a metal water bottle. Could have been filled. We're not sure. We got to see how much water is in there, that we haven't done the math yet. See how much water is in there. And clonked Djokovic on the head, who spent 5 to 10 minutes on the ground from a water bottle that plonked him on the head from 4 feet. For every Djokovic fan out there that said that lineswoman made a big deal out of the ball hitting her in the throat at like 60 miles an hour, your boy spent 10 minutes on the ground from a water bottle from 4 feet. Calm down with who's making an overreaction. But yes, Djokovic did get hit in the head with a water bottle.
You want to take this one, Fred?
Yeah, I mean,
he thought it was funny.
I don't doubt that it hurt.
It hurt. It 100% hurt.
I don't doubt it. And who knows, man? Like, it may have influenced it. Like, it may have caused a concussion, or who knows how severe. But as much as I don't like the guy, he just got severely outplayed in the next round.
He got smacked.
And then in his press conference, I mean, they kept asking him the questions about it. And I actually didn't mind the way he answered. He's like, look, yesterday I went, I had a pretty light practice. I felt fine. Like, I think I felt okay. He goes, I went out there today, and he's like, I can't tell you if yes, it affected me, or no, it didn't affect me. He goes, I just wasn't myself today. And my coordination was off, and all this stuff happened. It's like, he kind of blames it, but at the same time, he's like, look,
it was a pro answer.
Yeah, it was good. And I respect that, because because a lot of times he will go up there and he's like, yep, this is exactly what happened. It's the guy didn't play well. It's all me, blah, 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 blah.
This is how I know he's concussed. He's making sense in press conferences. This is how I know that Novak Djokovic is concussed. He's answering his own questions. He's answering them normally. And he's not completely laying the blame at everybody around him. So I think he 100% is concussed, and I'm worried about a CTE at this point. I mean, I dissected that film like the Zapruder film. Like, you know, I was looking through it frame by frame. I was back and to the left.
I think
he's back and to the left.
I personally think he's milking it a little bit.
Well, I mean, this is the guy that when he misses a forehand, like falls over and like pretends to like be the most off balance human.
Milking it to the point where it's prolonged over multiple days. Like, yes, was on the ground for 10 minutes. Side note, didn't give that person the autograph. I would have done that. I would have been the consummate professional that I am and still giving the autograph. Anyway, next day gets smoked by Sketch Chilean.
Sketch
Canadian.
Still Chilean. Fights under.
I know. We gotta tell the people that. So
hold on. Let me finish.
You're the one that. Okay, go ahead.
Fights under one flag. He's Sketch Chilean. Gets smoked. Takes that into the press and actually talks about it. Like, talks about it. You guys think he talked about it all professionally? Whatever. The way I think I hear it is that none of these guys ever played contact sports in their life.
No shit. Right? They played tennis from the age of 4.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they mean
they weren't going out playing rugby.
This guy always talks about coming from war-torn Belgrade.
Well, it doesn't mean he fought in the war. He was like 5.
He couldn't have fought in the war because he got hit in the head with a water bottle. Imagine getting hit in the head with some shrapnel.
Like, Cole, are you upset that Novak Djokovic didn't fight in a civil war as a 5-year-old?
He's weak and he's milking.
Cole, you work at a country club.
He's finding an excuse to blame his poor performance. He has lost every final. I don't think he's made any finals, and he hasn't won any titles this year.
He's not.
He's playing like shit, and he's going to try and blame it on a water bottle.
He's not. I don't think he is. I think he's trying to distract from the fact that he's playing like crap. Like,
Exactly my point. I
yeah.
think, yeah.
For him, crap for him. For any other tour pro, it'd be fine.
My 2 cents.
Yeah, exactly. But I think
Cole's 2 cents was he didn't fight the Civil War.
As a 5 year old.
Yeah, the guy's supposed to be tough, right?
Guy's supposed to be tough. Instead of going to kindergarten, he needed to be out there fighting the war for his part
of
the
country.
That's not
what I said. That's not what I said. So
Like,
if the guy's gonna get phased by a water bottle, we've got some
well,
issues.
I think I don't know. He can't milk this any longer. So it's not gonna be the story of the next tournament. So we didn't have to hear it anymore. He got absolutely his ass
worked.
Kicked. Yeah. I mean, Tabilo played awesome.
He did.
Forehand like I've never seen before from that guy. Served fantastic.
It looked Verdasco-esque.
Yeah,
it looks very Verdasco-esque.
And he goes, I'm just gonna hit the shit out of every forehand.
That
and it worked exactly. So I think it was a combo of, yeah, Djokovic was just off, and this was a distraction for the media to talk about that.
The helmet.
Instead of him actually just not playing that well in 2024. And that's okay. But for him, it's not okay. And for the media, it's not okay. And for the GOAT debate, it's not okay. And blah, blah, blah. So
every 4 or 5 years, you can have a down year. It's like the S&P 500. It's okay to have a recession. It's all right. Probably bounce back next year. Relax.
Not in your line of work, buddy.
Yeah, but like, just own it. You're playing like garbage. Own it. Holger Rune, has he been talking about how dumb he's been playing lately? No, he's just falling in the ranking and trying to make it work.
He's inspiring coaches left and right. He'll be done with Patrick in a week.
That's what I was gonna say. He'll just be on his fourth coach of the year.
I mean, it back to Tabilo, though, is it he did what I said you have to do when you play Novak Djokovic, which is you just have to hit through him. It's the only way. It's a problem when you play Novak, even when he's playing poorly, is you just have to hit the ball through the guy. If you watch that match, Djokovic is consistently backwards.
Yeah,
he's leaning,
play,
he's falling. You have to Wawrinka him.
Yeah, you can't play with him. You have to play through him.
You have to Wawrinka and team him. That's what you have to do. You have to do that. That's your only shot, realistically. Other than that, you're going to run into some trouble. The thing with the water bottle, why it kind of made breaking news, though, to kind of wrap that up, is that Djokovic has put himself in a spot over the course of his career that people thought that it was intentional. Where I think almost every other player on tour, nobody would have thought that somebody threw a water bottle at somebody's head. But because of the way Djokovic, like, you know, before the video came out, it fell out of the guy's backpack, there was a day or two where we all thought it was intentional.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Djokovic has made light of this situation as well, is because nobody else, if that was Federer, everybody else would have been like, oh my God, what an accident this was. Like, you know, who care? If it was Hrkacz, everybody like, wow, an accident. But because it's Djokovic and he puts himself out there and makes himself controversial, we all thought it was intentional. And then it turned out that it was a water bottle slipping out of a backpack.
That guy should write an apology note to him and say, I'm sorry. And then send like something to get signed and see if Djokovic
He should have the same PR team that did Djokovic's I'm sorry for hitting the ball person note and send that to he should hire the same PR team and have him send have that letter sent.
I'm sorry for running a huge event in the middle of a pandemic and giving
yeah. Also the rest of tennis, the tennis world is like, what do we ban now from tournaments? Do you know how a water bottle slipped out of a guy's backpack? Shut up.
Yeah,
like shut up. These are the same people that want like sustainable water practices and they're upset this guy had a water bottle on him. Just shut up. Like, it's no big deal.
What you need to ban is these freaking Italian fans sitting in the front row talking about people's mothers and brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
Get those guys the hell out of there.
Yeah, that was Korda's second round match was all about that.
And then it was happening again in his third round against Fritz. Yeah.
Yeah, Korda was playing Caboli, so I kind of understand, you know, playing in Italian. I'm kidding. No, no, it's not okay. They were bringing a level today, though. In Napolitano, his match today versus Nicolas Jarry, that was a fun atmosphere. They do know how to party. They do know how to root for their guys. But, of course, just like in anybody.
I mean, even Djokovic
can't cross the line.
Djokovic was pissed in his match before he lost or with Tabilo. He was serving in the final game of the match. And in between first and second serves, like, you can tell he just has this pissed off look on his face and he just wants to yell at the crowd, shut the fuck up. Because they just keep, whoa, no, 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 every freaking minute. And it's like, dude, as soon as the guy's bouncing the ball for the serve, like, shut up. Like, it's just part of the sport, unfortunately. Like, you got to be quiet. And the and it's this tournament, it's so consistent every single year that players are always having problems at this tournament where the crowd just doesn't know how to control themselves.
Yeah, but players want people to just be able to talk. Like Tiafoe said that, oh, just let him talk, let him be. So which side are we? I like the
Well,
atmosphere. And if it
talk
bleeds
is
over,
different.
and if it bleeds over a little bit into the atmosphere of the match actually being played, the ball being live, and then quiets down during the point, I don't care.
Talk is different than insulting players' families and getting personal with it.
Yes,
Like,
it's different.
or screaming out. Like, if
yeah.
you to the US Open, there's a, like we talked about last year, there's the constant murmur that is at all at the US Open. There's that
The
talking.
buzz.
Yeah, but there's it's never dead silent. But there's also very rarely, it happens obviously because it's freaking New York, but like people aren't just screaming out incessantly when like you're supposed to sort of be quiet or at least keep the same buzz level that is going on.
It's never the noise, it's the absence of noise to noise. I think that's kind of it. And it's always the ultimate like smackdown, I guess you want to say, for people that don't play tennis or golf or something like that. Like, oh, your sport requires you to be quiet. And it's like, if you made basketball quiet and then the guy was taking a jumper and then somebody screamed, he would fucking yank the thing into the crowd. Like, you
Yeah.
know, you'd freak out. It's just the way the sport was done. I'm a fan for allowing the fans to talk and be passionate and all that kind of stuff. Just don't go after the families. Don't go after the families and don't intentionally try to make somebody lose. Like, be a fan that's there to enjoy the sport. Maybe be a fan that's there to help out a family member or a friend that doesn't know much about tennis and teach them what's going on so they can get involved in the sport and cheer on great shots or great points. Don't just be an asshole. And that's coming from a Philadelphia guy. I just
Yeah.
want everybody to know that. That's coming from a Philadelphia guy.
Pack your AAAs.
Credit to the DJ today. He was playing absolutely fire tunes. Keep bringing the energy out there on a grandstand today for the Italians. Freed from desire. Blasted it. I was going crazy in here, rooting for the Italians. It's awesome.
You sound like that guy on social media with him and his girlfriend who goes, Pookie's looking absolutely fire
It
tonight.
was.
And that's Cole's like, the DJ was just
DJ was bringing an
absolutely
absolutely
fire.
fire tune tonight.
It
Was awesome. I turned up the live feed. I was going crazy in here. It's like a nightclub at 11 a.m. this morning.
would be remiss at Rome not to mention the fact that who's not playing and who's already kind of pulled out of this tournament. Obviously, Jannik Sinner is missed. Carlos Alcaraz missed. We've had a couple people retire during this dinner. Dinner during this match. I don't know why I said that. I'm in left field picking
Over.
dinners. Yeah, well, you know why? Because I saw somebody on the social media post call him Jannik Dinner. It was a fat guy playing tennis, and that's what my brain went to when I said Jannik Sinner, which I gotta adopt that nickname. I've been Roger Federer for years, but Jannik Dinner may be my favorite one. It was a post I think I shared with Fred, this big fellow playing tennis, and he reminded me a little bit of myself. But I think what we're just seeing now is just a lot of players have talked about it. It's a grueling, it's tour is grueling right now. It's a lot of players playing in consecutive weeks, and it's just wearing these guys down a little bit. And I think we forget because we've been spoiled by the big three who felt like they were never injured, or if they were injured, they were out for a while. That this is what happens to general players on tour. They get hurt. They just get hurt playing every single day of every single moment of every single year.
I think the fact that there's also more parity in the men's game right now than there's ever been is playing a big role in this because we're seeing kind of not random guys, but guys that maybe wouldn't ever make it past like third or fourth rounds of some events. They're making deep runs. And then it's like, oh shit, I signed up for Bucharest next week. I still got to go play that. And then you got to go play. And
Because
maybe
they need it.
you play another match or two there, and then you get hurt because your body wasn't ready for 7 matches in 2 weeks. But the big three, like you said, we're used to them being healthy all the time. But also the way they did their schedule, they're not playing more than like 10 or 12 events in a year. So it's easy to kind of stay healthier because they didn't need to play more events than that.
I mean, if we remember like Federer, Djokovic, and Nadal at their peak powers, I mean, like Federer's best year, he went like 96-5. Like, it's if he won, if he went and made every single Grand Slam final, it's 28 matches. He still played roughly 100 matches after that. Like, you know, you're playing in at least 15, 20 tournaments, if that's the case, when he was at his peak powers. I liked your point about the parody, because I think we in this podcast can name the weird random runs that happened during the Big Three era that were, and now it's every single other week. There's somebody that we're not expecting to do it, to do something, and they're doing it. Like, I can name the Jersey Janowitzes of the world.
Yeah.
Were you, I saw the J popping up on you. Is that the one you're going to go for?
Yeah. Or like even Soderling was a run that people don't talk about. Lucas Raszul was one that happens. Like there's, yeah. I mean, every year there was like three that we could talk about, where now every week there's a new one every week.
Every week there's three.
And there might be multiple.
Depending on which tournaments are going on.
Yeah, like Tabilo and Alexander Muller.
The OnlyFans.
Yeah,
OnlyFans, man.
Yeah, Muller's he's qualified for this tournament as well. So he had to play two.
Whoa, let's go back to that. I don't know what that is.
He's sponsored by OnlyFans. We talked about this. He wore a bucket hat that said OnlyFans in his press conference today. It was like a tiny little bucket cap that said OnlyFans.
No way.
It was phenomenal. It was so great. Yeah, his big sponsorship is OnlyFans. But yeah, he beats our friend of the podcast, Pablo's favorite player, Andrei Rublev. He beats him today after the Rublev resurgence. So it's like, you know, we're seeing more random runs that's going to keep happening. Just get used to it. Embrace it, tennis fans. Get excited for it.
Yep, the resurgence of parody.
It's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. I don't want to, you know, dive too much into it, but that Rublev resurgence, I don't really know where it came from, but it's not, I don't read too much into that, but we'll see where it comes in Roland Garros time.
Hey, careful what you say or you might end up with a phone call from a number you
that I don't have saved.
Just careful what you say. That's where we're gonna end it.
But no, I mean, it's the voice of general. I feel like I tend to be the one that overreacts maybe the least. I mean, Fred doesn't react, so I don't think Fred could overreact to things. But that's been my point for a year and a half, 2 years now, is that once the big three die off, which it looks like we're getting to that point, the asteroid is hit and the dinosaurs are dying, is that we're going to see more parity. The game is going to be more rounded out, and we're going to see players 15 to 50 making runs that we've never seen before, winning tournaments, making quarterfinals somewhere, making deep runs into 1000s. It's going to keep happening. It's just going to be who gets hot in a singular week. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if in like 2 years, Dominic Koepfer is in like a Masters semifinal. Like, it would not shock me.
That would shock me as well.
It wouldn't. He could get hot. We just saw Aslan Karatsev last year in a semifinal. We saw Jan Leonard Struff in a final of a 1000. Like, those are guys that never had a chance 20 years ago. Gilles Muller made one run at Wimbledon, and we still talk about it to this day, and he lost in the quarterfinals.
It's because he beat Nadal.
Yeah.
And Nadal hit his head on the ceiling in that match. That's why we talk about that match.
No, we don't talk about him.
Here we go. Nadal hit his head on the ceiling and didn't fucking lose and didn't, like,
yeah, he did bash his head
about
into
the next day. You know what I mean?
Well, and he whacked his head.
I was about to ask, who got more concussed, Djokovic from the water bottle or Nadal from jumping into the ceiling in the Wimbledon?
I would have been okay if Nadal retired after that match. During that match, that was a hefty bump.
Yeah, but the thing is if Nadal wins that match, the only thing we're going is like, hey, remember when Nadal banged his head into the door frame and then beat some guy who we've never heard of,
yeah,
from some tiny ass country? Like, that's what we would have.
That run basically got Gilles Muller a tennis TV job.
That's my point. That's my point. We're going to see Gilles Muller's runs every single year now, multiple times a year. It's going to happen. Buckle up for it. It's fun. It's what makes tennis great sometimes.
Won't be done.
Well, now that we're here, before we go into the women's side of it, let's take a look at the round of 16 and let's make a pick here.
I'll stick with what I said in your guys' text messages. Just feels like a Zverev week.
Feels like a Zverev. I actually, weirdly enough, did not pick Djokovic. I actually stayed away from that. I weirdly enough thought Hurkacz could do something, but he's been playing. I'm gonna pick Steph because he's been playing good ball on clay, and I think he's got a winnable next match against Demon Orr. And that puts him in the quarterfinals against either Jerry or Muller.
True.
Fred, did I take your pick by accident?
No, you didn't. I just think that top half of the draw is interesting. Tabilo, Khachanov, Zhang, Montero is around a 16 matchup.
Montero playing very well back-to-back
They
weeks.
there are your Muellers right there.
Yep.
Zhang, Montero, Borges,
Yep.
Muller, funny enough, Muller.
Yep.
I mean, that's nuts.
Yep. Yeah, but I don't know. I'm going Taylor Fritz.
Wow.
Yeah,
Wow.
I think he's gonna have an interesting one with Grigor tomorrow, and then
Hottest player on
if
tour.
he can get through Zverev, if he can get through Zverev in that next round, I think he's not a cakewalk, but he gets to play either Montero, Zhang, Khachanov, or Tabilo to make a final. So he's got maybe the toughest of the next two matches, but then would have sort of the easier the two matches on the back end. So I'm
It's fair.
taking Claylor, as Cole called him.
As of right now,
Claylor
as of right
Fritz.
now, Djokovic would not be in the World Tour final. This is what I do this as well every week. I give us a World Tour finals update. Djokovic would
Thanks.
not be in, and Dimitrov would be ninth. So Dimitrov in nine, Fritz in 10, Hurkacz in 11, Djokovic 12. None of those guys would be in. It's
How
crazy.
far behind is Novak Djokovic from Grigor Dimitrov in that live ranking?
About 350 points.
So the hottest player on tour is 350 points better than Djokovic's worst ever start in his career for the last 20 years.
I guess so.
Just a reminder of what we hold these guys to, the Nadals, Djokovic's, and formerly Federer's of the world.
But just a reminder that Dimitrov is that much hotter than Hurkacz this year.
Unreal.
Oh my God.
Okay,
Now, so
I like those picks. They're not just the run of the mill picks there. I think with a lot of guys out, and it being the week before a master, sorry, a Grand Slam, we'll see the tournament before that everybody plays.
yeah, it's the big one before. But this is a Masters 1000, and we're seeing Zhang, Montero, and a sketch Chilean slash Canadian. That's nuts. That just should not happen. But that's where we're at now. Tennis, enjoy it, embrace it. On the women's side, though, which is normally the side of all the parity, is where we're getting a little bit more stability for the most part. And we are getting some old guards kind of making runs. Cole, run us through the Wernecki Tour Association.
Yeah, I'll just roll through the favorites right now. I mean, Swiatek's back as usual. Keith's probably picked her every week for the last 2 years.
I've been right
If it
80%
ain't
of
broke,
weeks.
don't fix it, right?
I've been right 80% of the weeks.
Yeah, so Swiatek versus Keys quarterfinals tomorrow.
He's been playing good.
That gallon hat's just getting bigger.
Doug Dimmadome from the Dim Zone Dimmadome.
Coco Gauff versus Xinchen Zhang, who actually said some really nice things about Osaka in a courtside interview yesterday.
Who's playing better tennis?
That was interesting to hear. Azarenka is playing Danielle Collins. Azarenka beating out Sakkari in a one-sided way, 6-3, 6-1. Collins is just so good on clay this year. It's incredible.
She's good on anything.
Yeah, this is, sorry, I corrected me there, but
No, but and you're
such a
not
good
wrong about
run.
Clay.
She's won, I think, if I don't know what the stat is, Keith, but she's lost one match in the last four tournaments so far.
It's stupid.
And then
She's
we have,
played like the second best woman on tour since the Australian Open.
yeah. And then Sabalenka, who came through a 2.5 hour match today, serving for it, I think was 6-5 serving for it.
No,
No,
she
serving
served for it
5-4
at 5-4,
in the
like
third.
got broken and was had to serve to force a breaker at 5-6. Who's
Playing
she play?
Svitolina. This finished like 30 minutes ago, so very late night there in Rome. She'll be playing French Open champion, 2019 champion, when she was 19 years old, Yelena Ostapenko, who also won a three-set battle today. Get ready for some big hitting in that quarterfinal, just slap fest.
We'll see if Sabalenka makes it out there. She was getting treatment the entire third set on her back.
She was getting back treatments on every changeover in the third set.
I'll take the money that she does not play. It's too close to the French Open. She ain't gone.
Yep, she got through this one today, and
Yep.
then just let Ostapenko go to the next round and create some beef with someone else.
My favorite thing about tennis fans is that if she would have retired during that match, they would have been like, oh, I can't believe she quit on the match. And then she plays the match and like wins it. And then she retires. And I'm like, why didn't she quit during the match so that this person could go to the next round?
Tell them your stat. She's never, Sabalenka has never retired.
Yeah, 343 matches. She's never retired. Here's another stat. They've played twice this exact matchup, and it was both on hard court. And Ostapenko is 0-2 against her. So Fred likes to call this one a coin toss. I'm going to be glued to the TV. Oh, wait, I can't watch it. Thanks, Tennis Channel.
Tennis Channel.
Well, no, I'll just follow Ben Rothenberg's live tweets on Twitter. Oh, wait, he's tweeting about Eurovision. I don't know what that is, but it's not tennis.
You can't have a German girlfriend and not know Eurovision.
I'll be reading his book on Naomi
Osaka. I don't know what that is, but is this like a dance competition or something?
Singing.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'll make sure I tune in.
That's where ABBA came from.
Okay.
Yeah. It's ABBA. That's how ABBA got famous.
Let's do some picks here for the ladies' side.
Cole, lead us off because I'm pulling up the draw to see who's left.
Keith and I will both be taking Swiatek.
Keith will not be taking Swiatek. Keith is actually going to, because this is how you know that I never let rationale get in the way of my decision making. I'm taking Ostapenko.
Oof.
This feels like an Ostapenko one tournament. I think Sabalenka pulls out. I think she wins her next two.
I don't think it matters who Ostapenko plays. Her play of her style.
It does matter who she plays, because if she was that good, then she'd win every time.
What's up with you and just cut me off tonight? I think with the way that Ostapenko just plays in general, like her style of play, it's so volatile that over the course of five or six matches, somebody's going to get her.
But she is good on clay. I mean, you don't win a Roland Garros unless you're good on clay.
It gives her more time to slap.
Yep, exactly. What the five fingers say to the face?
Well, she's not going to have. Oh my God, Keith.
It's kind of what I wish I could do to you right now.
She's not even going to make it past her next round.
Oh my God.
Because I'm taking Danielle Collins winning the title.
That's fair.
Yep, she's going to go through Azarenka pretty routinely. And then you're going to, I think I'm with you. I don't think Sabalenka plays. So we're going to see Ostapenko get a walkthrough to the next round, but then she's going to have to play DC.
I think
Danielle Collins.
I think Sabalenka's going to play.
That's the ultimate just feud matchup. Like those two are just angry all the time, it seems like, and
fire
saying
fire.
Come on all the time. There's going to be a lot of winners, a lot of errors. That's a match you got to wait to see the handshake.
Well, you got to watch how many times you cut off Fred there. I mean, that was at least two or three times during that.
Okay.
See, but the difference is, Keith, he's sitting right next to me, so I can slap him if I need to. Cole can't slap you through this Zoom all the way in Pennsylvania,
not too far away. Cole, you okay, buddy?
I'm
is everything so okay?
Yeah,
look how angry he is. I wish it was on YouTube.
He's happy. We're in Texas.
Come on.
I'm great. Everything's fine, Keith. It's like Tom Brady during the roast. I love this. I love that my wife left me.
Oh man.
Oh my God. And on that completely inappropriate and off topic note, I think we gotta leave it. Watch some Rome, play some tennis. Your boy's back out in the court. I played last week and actually won a match, so that felt kind of nice. Cole, I'm excited for you to get out in the court with Fred. I don't care what the weather is. I want to see some videos of the boys hitting. We're all dying for it. We're dying for it, gentlemen.
Make sure you bring your water bottles. Make sure you keep some bubble wrap wrapped around them.
And wear your helmets.
We are Dimsdome Dimmadome.
Catch you next week.